Welcome back to Tab U. My name's Katrina. I am here back again with special guests. I'm joined by Sam Morris from Tab.
Wave all the cameras.
And our very special guest today, Joel Shields from PSJ Properties. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yep, I'm Joel. I buy and sell property, have done for probably the last 7 or 8 years, been involved in property for the last 12 to 15 years. Looking forward to answering all the questions.
So safe to say you're an expert in property trading.
I wouldn't say that, but
well, sounds like you did. Sounds like you did.
Because today's topic is on property trading, so yes. You are definitely going to be our expert. First question we're going to kick things off with is quite simply, what is property trading?
Okay, so there's a few variables to that, but the main property trading is, in the simplest term, buying something for £1 and selling it for £1.20, just making a profit. So you're buying it without completing on the purchase, you're seeing an opportunity, finding a purchaser from to take the property on from you at higher price and taking the profit in between. That's as simple as that.
Why would the purchaser not just go straight to where you're buying it from?
There is a semi-code of conduct in the property world, or some people will say there isn't, but once you've got a contract on something, you have to be notified by the person you're buying from that they are going to be sending out a contract to someone else. So you're pretty much, once you've got your contract in place, you've done your searches and your due diligence, you're pretty much secure.
So is this the same term as flipping a house, in a way?
In a roundabout way, yes. Majority of the stuff that I do, I don't do a lot of residential. I have done in the past. I've bought and sold houses, but mainly commercial with maybe an element of residential, so a shop and upper or a piece of land or whatever it may be. But yeah, it is in a broad scheme, yes, it is. It's the same kind of thing.
And there's no terminology called flipping an office?
No, it's just flipping.
Just flipping, okay, fine. And when I was kind of looking at the questions for today, contract assignments came up, also came up, oddly enough, in your talk this morning.
Yeah, we did a presentation this morning. Mm. So we were talking about the kind of reasons people come to Tab for loans, and one of them is to support the kind of back end of the transaction where there's a contract reassignment.
Sure.
I guess that's the question for you. What exactly, in your words, what's a contract? What are contract assignments?
Well, so a lot of the time, the seller or the seller's lawyer will put in a clause where you can't assign the contract. It's very common, because obviously we can go, I can put it under my name, Joel Shields, and then change it last minute to Joe Bloggs. And a lot of people, they don't obviously. They're happy with their price from on day one, the seller. But obviously, if you're making a profit on it, a quick turn, as we like to say, they get upset because they're selling it to me, but then I'm selling it on and making an even bigger profit. But at the end of the day, they were happy with their price. So I get it, but they put in a clause where it doesn't allow you to assign. So the majority of the time, we are exchanging at the same time. I'm exchanging with the seller, and then I'm exchanging with a new buyer at a higher price. So there's two contracts for one property.
Fine.
So assigning is quite rare. It does happen, but it's quite rare because there's the lawyers put a lot of barriers in your way to do that.
Fine. So next question is, what do I need to consider about a contract reassignment? Arguably, not that much, because there's two contracts in place.
So yeah, exactly. You need to check if it's assignable. If it's assignable, then you can do it. But if it's not, then it's not such a. It's a major. It's a more cost because the lawyers are winning. Basically, you're paying your lawyer to do the contract, and then the buyer's paying another lawyer to sort his contract out. So it gets complicated because then depending on the transaction, I'll have a contract with the seller. And then I'll have another contract with the buyer, so they all need to align, and all the questions need to be the same. So it does can be complicated, but 9 times out of 10, they all happen.
I have one question on this.
Yeah.
In the event I become a party to a reassigned contract,
yeah,
and I'm the new incoming buyer, yeah, what things do I need to consider? Am I bound to the terms of the contract that you've already agreed?
Yes, but a lot of the time we are acting as a middleman, so we're asking the questions on our to our seller, but those questions are coming from you. So we're sitting in the middle, and we're sending you out all the information that we've got, and then you're asking the questions, and we feed that back to the.
So, as far as I'm aware, you're the seller. To me, you're always the seller.
Correct. Fine. Yeah, and to my buyer, to my seller, I'm always the buyer.
Yep.
So, and he won't know that until 6 months down the line. Until
land, eventually, it's pen on paper, and we see who's.
And the land registry is updated. He won't know until that day. So, I save face with my seller.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I am selling it on for a higher price, but he's none the wiser unless he checks back on it in 6 months' time.
Ultimately, I do get the impression that as long as everyone's happy with what they're agreeing in their contract,
correct,
seller gets what they want.
Correct.
You're buying it for what you want, and I'm coming in and buying it for the price that I'm happy with as well. So it seems like a good deal for everyone.
It is a good deal for everyone, but then obviously you do get upset sellers in the end if they find out, because it's natural if they've just
they feel like someone might someone's have taken money
made
out of the
may have made 50 grand extra. Why couldn't I have got the 50 grand? But normally it goes back to the agent or whoever it might be. So,
well, I presume sometimes circumstances come into play.
Yeah, so, of course.
A seller that's looking for a quick sale will come to you because you can act fast.
Yeah,
the fact that you're flipping it on
that shouldn't matter. He's but happy again, with his price.
Exactly. As long as everyone's happy with the price agreed.
Yeah. It's kind of Wild West.
Yeah.
So, well, moving on to question number two. What is the difference between property trader and a property investor?
So a property trader is more short term, is looking for the quick buck doesn't have to be like I've just explained. Some traders will buy it, go and monetize it, i.e. go and get planning or go and get a new lease on a commercial property to enhance their product and then sell it on in 6 months' time. But a property investor is looking at it for a return, a yield, and a bit of capital growth. But they're happy to tuck it away and leave it there for X number of years and maybe in the future sell it at some point. But yeah, they're looking for, they've got some spare cash. They just want to tuck it away and get a return.
So the deals that you look at, you're looking for immediate margin.
Yeah, immediate margin or at least a margin within a short space of time, 6 months or so, if you need to go and get planning on it.
So what would make you hold or sell a property? What for you determines whether or not you should hold on to something or just get rid of it straight away?
Yeah, there isn't. If you can make a profit, you move on. There's a good saying, you never go skimp making a profit. So if you can do that, move on. But then on the flip side, you'll look back in 20 years and this is kind of the situation mine now that you look back in 20 years and you've got nothing to show for it. You've done all these deals, great, but there's no bricks and mortar. You've just got money in the bank that you spent on whatever you spent it on. So the idea is to, if you can, buy something that's got more than kind of one facet to it, sell off majority of it and keep a little bit and keep doing that every time if you can. It's easier said than done, but that's the idea. And not everyone wants that. No, not everyone wants the hassle of holding property, but for me, that would be my dream, if you like, is to have a small portfolio for my children or whatever it might be in the future.
And would a property trader use a mortgage or a bridging loan?
Yes. I think that for me, if you're doing the quick kind of back-to-back transactions, you wouldn't need them. You might need a family friend or a friend that's got some cash that you can quick for a deposit, because that's 9 times 10, you only need 10%. That's all you need. But yes, you would need bridging, because if you're looking at the short term, there's no point going to get a mortgage or a long-term debt. A bridging makes sense, especially now with rates today, that it's not actually that much more expensive than going to get a long-term debt on it. So I think bridging makes sense, because if you're only holding it for 6 months, then it's rolled up and you pay it off at the end and everyone's a winner.
So with kind of, I guess, a commercial property trade, you've sourced the property, and we'll go into that later, but you found one you're going to buy.
Yep.
or you exchange contracts.
Yeah.
You then have another buyer lined up.
Yeah.
You pay the deposit here.
Yeah.
He's got his long-term funding ready.
Yeah, 9 times of 10, he would have his long-term funding ready. But yeah, he would go and get bridging, or he may have cash. I deal with a lot of the kind of a lot of the community money, where they'll go and do it in cash first and then refinance later down the line. But yeah, it's mixed bag, if I'm honest.
So you never have to front up the whole.
And sometimes you can even, if you're exchanging at the same time, you can even use their deposit as your deposit.
Ah.
So it filters down the chain. So you actually don't have to put any money in.
Very clever.
What happens in the event that you're relying on them to go and seek debt elsewhere, or a bridge or a mortgage, and they don't manage to arrange it and they don't have access to the cash? Are you obligated to complete on the purchase?
Yeah. But they run that risk. But you can either then renege and drop your deposit, because you've already got their deposit there, so you might have there'll be a small profit or whatever. Although the seller can come after you for the rest, but touch wood, not happened to me yet. But
we're trying to understand the risks involved with this. So
there is the risk. There is the risk that they don't complete, and then you're left holding the baby. For instance, a friend of mine does a similar thing. He the other day they exchanged at Christmas time. It was coming to completion. You ready to complete? No, we're not quite ready. You need a few more days. You serve notice on them. You get served notice on yourself. So you might get served 10 days notice, but you obviously cut theirs down to 5 days so that you've got a bit of buffer. But then you have to ready yourself to go and buy it. So you have to phone up Tab or whoever it might be and get the funding ready, just in case that they don't perform, because you want to save face. And ultimately, you want to do the deal. So
I mean, I imagine every deal presents its own quirks and challenges and risks.
Yeah.
What other things really are you looking out for as potential risks?
You like to do business with people you've done with before.
Mm-hmm.
People that are in the industry that are happy to buy on the turn, because not everyone wants to. Relationships, either with the buyer or an agent who's involved, who's dealt with the buyer on numerous occasions. But yeah, there's risk to everything, but 9 times out of 10, I would say 9.5 times out of 10, it all works out in the end. And if people haven't got the money on completion, they'll find it, because they don't want to lose their 100 grand or whatever it might be.
So in those 9.5 times out of 10, obviously things go to plan.
Yeah.
So talk to us about some of the benefits of being a property trader. What's the upside?
The upside is that it's in a good market, it can be quick turnaround, and you can be making a nice, decent amount of money on each transaction. But it's finding the deals is the key. I'm sure you'll come to that at some point. But it's a quick profit. You move on to the next one. You look like a hero to your seller, because you've done what you said you're going to do. In fact, he doesn't know that you've already sold it on, but you're building the relationships, and that's what it's about. You're getting a name in the business, that you find good stock, and
you deliver on what you say you're going to do.
And you deliver.
Great. Well, going on to that question, question number 3, what types of property would you buy and sell?
I've bought all weird and wonderful types of property, but as I said to you at the beginning, mainly commercial with an element of residential. I've bought houses, I've bought bits of land, industrial buildings I've sold, bought and sold. So it's, if I'm honest with you, anything where I can make a pound note.
Only in the UK?
Only in the UK, yeah.
Is that something you'd explore other territories?
I think it's, you're better just to keep in the market that you know, mainly inside the M25 as well. Haven't done much outside, just because I like to be able to drive there or at least be in with a few hours away so that I understand it more. And the values normally within the M25, you get a gut feel. When you go outside, it's a little bit more difficult for me.
Yeah.
Are there any particular asset types you avoid?
Is there any assets?
Expensive ones.
Yeah. You say expensive ones, but yeah, anything that's kind of a bit too polished, I try to stay away from. Look, sometimes you do get the opportunity where you're buying it at a lower value and there is a market on it. But residential, I like to buy, but it's smaller residential. The commercial element, the reason I like that, it's got a value. It's already normally has a lease in place, so you're already getting an income. Whereas resi, vacant resi, can be difficult to move on, especially flats. Houses, not so much, but flats I try and avoid if I can.
Mm-hmm. Are there any deals you've done that stand out to you? What's the most unique property that you've transacted on?
I wouldn't say it's the most unique property that I bought, but it was a deal that I was buying in Dalston, and we'd been approached by an agent, said, you can buy this at this price, and we had some backers on it. It was going to come towards Christmas time. I was going away. We needed to.
What year was this?
2018, I think.
Okay.
2018, not that long ago. And the backers that we had decided that, not the last minute, but just before, kind of while I was away, that it's not for them. They didn't fancy it, and we didn't have the money to do it ourselves. So there was someone I knew who was looking at there was three parts to it. There was a commercial building at the back, a new build residential building at the front, and then a listed building to the side. And we had someone that we knew that was looking at one of the buildings. So he was a friend of mine, so I was on holiday. I wanted to do the deal. You get a gut feel whether you think it's going to work or not. So I called him up and said, look, the backers, they don't want to do it. Do you fancy it? So he said, give me half an hour. He called me back and said, sure, we like it. We know your lawyer. We're going to call up the vendor and say the people that are buying it are messing around. We'll exchange today or in a couple of days, but it was a 4 million plus purchase. But we'll put 100 grand down today and we'll complete on Valentine's Day, it's 14th of February. So we only had, this was end of December, so we had 8 weeks and Christmas and everything. So we managed to agree that with the vendor, got it exchanged, and then we had 6 weeks to find the buyer for three parts of the building. And by hook or by crook, we did it. And we found three different parties to buy three different bits, and everything worked out fine. But that's a real risky... that was a real risky deal because we didn't have a long to complete. Normally we like to get longer than 6 weeks, 8 to 12 weeks. And although we only had a smaller deposit to put down, not the 450 grand that we'd normally have to put down, it was still a big risk. But ultimately my gut was right. It was a good deal. We did find the buyer, and everyone came out smelling like roses, but it can always go the other way.
And in that other way that you, I mean, I guess the risk is that you'd have to hold on to those three assets.
Yeah.
Maybe have to get a bridge or
exactly. You have to get
start paying correct. That off, costing you a bit more, squeezing that margin.
They do say though that most people in the business who are traders, if they've got any property that they own, it's because they've had to hold on to it. It's not because they wanted to. Majority of the time, it's they've got stuck with it. And look, obviously, if it's in the last 15, 20 years, they would have come out fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'd have to go and get a bridge. You'd have to phone up Sam and say, Sam, I need some money, like, tomorrow.
How much?
What loan to value. And you've got to get all your ducks in row.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll know pretty quickly. Like, you've got 6 weeks. You'll know within that first 3 weeks whether you're going to have a problem or not. And then you deal with it as it's kind of it's suck it and see it, if I'm honest with you.
Okay. Well, question number four is, how is a property trader different from an estate agent?
We're quite different. An estate agent is obviously he's selling it for his client and he's looking to get them best value. And we're trying not to deal with estate agents a lot of the time. And look, some of them have deals and they're selling something that they honestly don't know what it's worth. And you can see that from the pricing they put on it. So there is opportunities to buy from estate agents, but their job is very different. They're working for the client. They're trying to get best value. And we're trying to make that turn in between. So it's very different, if I'm mm-hmm. honest.
So I guess where you're both trying to facilitate a sale, one of you are trying to do best for the seller.
Yeah.
You're trying
we're
to do
doing
best
both, for, basically.
But more importantly, you want to make sure you're doing best for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's...
Yeah, we're granted. Buying for as best as... Yeah. For the less as price as possible.
But equally, you're always the middleman trying to make sure that
correct.
The deal actually goes through.
Yes.
So instead of taking a fee, you take the margin, but correct. You need to make sure everyone's doing
yeah,
their
I suppose
bit
we're like a bit of an estate agent on the second bit of the transaction.
Except you actually have the risk that yeah. you will need to complete on this purchase if all goes...
Yeah, it's all down to us.
Yeah.
But that's why it gives you that buzz. It's it's that fear factor and that the pressure and... If you're either meant for it or you're not, you either can do it or you can't, and it's not for everyone because it can turn you grey.
Yeah.
Someone or have no hair.
One step further.
So I guess you briefly touched on it. My next question was: can you trade a house without actually ever owning it?
Yes.
Because the only thing you're exchanging are the contracts
correct.
To say you're going to buy it.
Correct.
But you don't actually own the keys.
You don't actually complete. So obviously we don't pay any stamp duty because you have a certain period of time if you complete at the same time that you don't get double charged.
So but the seller will pay.
Yeah.
What Sorry, is that the period buyer. Of time?
I don't actually know. It's a bit
can
of a.
Can
it's
it
like
vary
a,
from
it's not. It's not like a few weeks. It's actually like a. It's a really short space of time.
Really?
So it has to happen very close together. But it's a well-known fact. And obviously, if we had to pay stamp, then a lot of the trades wouldn't happen because there's no margin because the stamp duty would kill the deal. But yes, that's a... It's yeah, you never complete on anything, although the seller thinks you have,
but you
don't.
And then each deal, there might be a different person involved. But you said you tend to work... with people you've got relationships with, people you know, people that have got a track record.
Yeah.
Where do you find these people?
I think it's just people that you gravitate to over time. You tend to, if you've got something, you pick up the phone to that one or two friends and say, and they're not kind of, and these people are not, they're normally like self-employed or work for smaller companies. They're not really the big kind of corporates, but I'd have two or three people that I'd pick up the phone to and say, I've got this, even quite early on when I've got a contract, when I've just got a contract, got this, do you have anyone? There was an example, I bought something just before lockdown in kind of January 2020, phoned up my friend, said, you got anyone? Yeah, I might have this guy, he'd look at that. He went to him, I gave him a price, negotiated a little, and he said, yeah, I like it, I'll have it. Went to have a look at it, all agreed, and it was smooth as butter. but that doesn't happen every time, but it's just a case where right timing, right fit, you kind of get a sense, depending what it is, who it might be for, just because of your knowledge of the people in the business and what they buy.
And where do you tend to find the properties that you're trading? Where do the opportunities come from?
I do a lot of canvassing, so a lot of letters. I used to send 1,000 letters a week. You might only get 10 replies if you're lucky. And then it might take you 18 months, 2 years to get that over the line, just by going backwards and forwards in timing. But it's all to do with, again, relationships, agents, looking what's on the market, because there is the opportunity to find the odd hidden gem here and there that's undervalued, or someone's looked at it and not kind of sure how they valued it and they've missed something. It's a real mixture.
Would you go to auctions?
Auctions are good to sell in for me. To buy in, you're looking at it on paper with the guy price. Yeah, it looks great, and you'll be able to, you can pay X. But by the time you go to the room or on the phone or online, you're outbid within kind of 20 seconds. You get the odd one, but it's not really somewhere where I would go to find the deals that I want, just because it just doesn't, for for what I'm looking for. It's more of a seller's market, that.
Yeah.
Not really for a buyer.
Well, there's no ceiling on how much you could sell
exactly.
for.
Exactly. So. It's good for me for selling it in the auction. You can do very well.
Yeah.
It doesn't always go the right way, but auction for me, I kind of have a flick through the catalogue, and if I see something, I might inquire. But
so the majority of the opportunities you come across are all off market,
pretty much.
Word of mouth.
Pretty much,
or
yeah.
through your network.
Through network or letter or yeah. picking up the phone to someone. It's all about timing. Mm-hmm. Catch someone at the right time, it works.
Yeah.
I don't want you to give away your secrets now, but when you're canvassing, which properties are you canvassing? Who are you targeting? What is it about the property
it's really,
that stands out?
Really,
to you?
It can be a bit more, it can be scattergun approach, like you're targeting different types of property, and some of the things you don't, not sure what they own, where they are, and you're just kind of you're sending letters out to these people for whatever reason, and they own property. It's just whether they call you and what they've got. On the other hand, I don't do it so much anymore. It's probably something I should do, but it's just go and walk a high street, mm-hmm. go and have a look. Does it look derelict? Is there anyone upstairs? Does it look like it's vacant? Is the shop closing down? Those just normal things that people, everyone use their knowledge just to when they're just like waiting for half an hour for someone, they might just have a little wander and see what's going on down the high street.
You've got to keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, yeah. Can't give too much away.
No, that's fine.
Well, I guess that does lead us on to the last question, which is, well, the last main question. Question number 5. How did you get into property trading?
So I don't think it's something that you can just jump into unless you've got a very good mentor. For me, I wasn't in the property business until 2010, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, a bit lost and kind of had a lot of friends that were in property. So they said, why don't you go and work as an estate agent? So I started as an estate agent. I was there for a couple of years.
What area were you in?
St. John's Wood.
Okay, so nice part of London.
Yeah, nice part of London. And I was in lettings, which was fun, fast-paced. And then got offered an opportunity in commercial agency in East London. So a completely different spectrum. But fancied it, and I knew the guy running the business, and we got on well, and it was good. Again, lettings, a bit of sales, few bits of dealing here and there with a few of the local property traders up in East London. And then I went to work for a property developer in Northwest London. So I've kind of had a broad spectrum of been everywhere. Yeah. I've jumped around
south?
A lot. Not south yet.
That's a stretch
yet.
Too far.
Yeah.
I do think there's a lot of value in the south though. I like the south. Yeah, so I worked for a small developer for 3 years. So I've got an understanding of how to build and costs, and although they're slightly different now, but and how to kind of find deals, I suppose. That was kind of where I learned most of my trade, and then worked for quite a predominant trader in East London for about 18 months, and then went on my own. So yeah, I've jumped around a bit, but I've got little experiences from mm-hmm. each sector, I suppose, which has kind of helped me to where I am now.
So resi, commercial, sales, lettings, development,
yeah.
and then into trading.
Yeah.
What were the key skills you found that allowed you to get started with going fully into the trading?
Yeah, I think it's my main skill, I suppose, is building rapport with people. I think that's key. If you're nice to people and you respond in the right way, they'll respond to you. If you're not, I don't think they give you the time of day. Mm-hmm. So you want to try and build up as like a friend or a colleague or whatever it may be. I think that's key. It's just treating people how you want to be treated. I think that's probably my first thing. And then I don't know. I suppose it's a feely business. It's not something you can teach. Mm-hmm. You either have it or you don't. It's a gut feel to whether you feel it's cheap or there's an angle. And if you sat back and just listen and learn to the right people, like having a mentor, like the people that I work for in the trading side of the business, is very well established. And you just kind of pick up little bits from them here and there. But yeah, just listen, learn, and be respectful, I think, is the main 3 points.
I guess earlier as well, you mentioned kind of resilient in a way, where you've got to take the risks to see the rewards. You know, it can go wrong.
Yeah, but, it can go. Can go wrong.
If you jump in, can reap the benefits. I guess.
You can reap the benefits, and it's not a, it's you haven't got anyone to rely on but yourself. You're not getting a salary. No one's paying you to do it. It's so you have to do deals. Otherwise, you don't earn any money.
I'm guessing the highs are high. Yeah, the lows are low.
But it's peaks and troughs. It can be. They come along like buses, two or three at a time, and then you might not have anything for 3 or 4 months, or something you're working on that's taking ages. So it's peaks and troughs, and it's not all glitz and glamour. It can be tough at points when the market, as it is now, is quite stagnant. It's difficult to trade. It's there's less people in the market. People are more cautious. Money's more expensive. So it's not, you've got to be prepared, and you've got to be buying the right stock at the right price. And what that is, what is the right price? No one quite knows at the moment, but you've just got to take punts on stuff and see if there's someone out there who pay you a little bit more.
I'm going to ask the difficult question to answer. Talking about peaks and troughs, percentage wise, what's the best purchase you made in terms of the return you made off the back of it? Have you ever made 100% return?
Yeah. Well, 100% return on money in.
Okay. And what about losses? Have you ever been part of a transaction where actually you ended up making a loss?
Yeah, we made a small loss, but that was one that we didn't trade. That was one where we wanted to go and get planning. We did get planning, but it didn't quite work out. We didn't make a huge loss, but we did make a loss. There was another instance where we bought a building, we sold off the front part, got planning on the back, missed a couple of key factors, which you do along the way, that you get a bit excited and you miss kind of a few key points that will enable you to build it or whatever it may be. But we came out. We came out even on that, or we made a profit. We didn't lose, so that was okay. But have we made a significant double our money? No, is the honest answer. But we have made, on one, we bought a parade in North London. Bad timing in terms of to trade, because it was the end of Brexit and coming out of the EU, and then the elections, so 2019. And we had to hold on to it, and then COVID hit, which didn't help. But out the blue, I was walking down the high street, I got a call from someone, said, I think you own this building, my client would like to buy it, and we made a very decent profit out of it, out of the blue. So it's hit and miss. It's hit and miss.
And I guess on the kind of, you touched on Brexit, COVID. How has the market changed in the past decade, and I guess more recently, the past 3-4 years now?
Well, I think the past decade, I think it's been very good. I don't think there's been much of a lull. Maybe when Brexit hit in 2016, when the vote came in, I think people got a bit scared and weren't sure what's happening.
What was it that made it good for you?
It was just that money was cheap. Market was rising. People were actively buying and selling. So that in that kind of, if you put that all into the pot, that's great for a trader. That's what you want. You're trying to find the opportunity. You know there's going to be someone who will buy it off you. But now it's different. It's money's more expensive. It's harder. It's not doom and gloom, but you've got to be very cautious of what you're buying.
Do you think people are more wise to what their property is worth now?
Yeah, definitely they're more wise, much more information out there. Not that there hasn't been, but there's more and more information.
It's always accessible.
Yeah, more accessible. Whether they're young or old, doesn't matter. They've always got a friend or someone they know in the business, or they can go and look on Zoopla or whatever it might be to have a look at what their property's worth. So it does make it harder to convince them. And it's not just that information, but obviously they're I get a lot of people saying, yeah, I'd love to sell, but what do I do with the money? And that may sound stupid to a lot of people, but if they sell it, they've got to pay tax. Then what do they do with it? It just sits in the bank and does very little.
You contact Tab, talk to our investor relations, Karen Delaney.
But they can't reinvest it. They can't buy what they've got again. And they've got kids, the kids will inherit it, and they'll just leave it for their children most of the time. But there are some that do want to sell, but they want to sell the companies, and that gets a little bit more complicated. So, it's a tough market at the moment, but I think it's going to stay like this for a while, but it's only going to go back up.
Well, that answered my last question.
Yeah, so. what are the predictions. So you reckon a little bit of stagnation
Stagnation, maybe a little bit of the market will go down slightly in the next. I don't think it's going to be an easy next 18 months, but you can't see, especially kind of London property, not going back up in the future. It's not going to be a systemic rise like it has been since the early 2000s, but there will be an increase. When that is, I'm not sure. Maybe when inflation comes down and interest rates come down, hopefully. But
it does seem, even when things are terrible, there's always something to do in London. There's always opportunity.
There's always
people are still transacting.
It's just harder and there's less of them. But
the opportunity's still out there.
But in some ways that's good, because it gets rid of the people that aren't that good, and that there's less people in the market buying, which helps people like us that we know what we're doing. We've got the money to do it. You've just got to kind of ride the storm.
I guess it's through that storm the strength of your network really comes through, you know?
100%. It's your connections, you're speaking to people, a lot of canvassing. I think going back to the old tactics.
You talked a lot about not looking after people, treating people the right way.
Yeah. And I think that goes a long way.
Even in the tough times, they'll come straight back to
you. I know that sounds a bit kind of weird from what I've said, that we're buying it and selling it on to a higher price.
But it doesn't when you also consider that everyone's getting what they want now.
Yeah, exactly.
So everyone's getting what they want. You deliver on what you say you're going to do.
Yeah, I always say that the vendor who you're buying from would only agree the price if he's happy. Mm. And if you sell it on for a profit, then that's your gain and your skill. But ultimately, he was happy with his price, or she was happy with her price. And that's life.
Well, let's end it there.
Yeah.
On that happy note.
Thank you, Joel.
No problem.
Appreciate
Thanks
you.
For having me.
Thanks, Joel, for coming in. Very useful. Where can people find you?
You can find me either on my website, psjproperty.com, which has all my details. If you've got any property you'd like to sell at cheap price, please contact me.
And if you need a bridge, contact us. And if you need investments, contact us. That's all from us today. Thank you very much for watching, listening. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe. Sam, thanks for coming back on.
That's all right. Thanks for having me.
See you next time.
Thanks a lot, guys.